I chose my friends carefully. The more politically active black students, the foreign students, the Chicanos, the Marxist professors and structural feminists and punk rock performance poets. We smoked cigarettes, attended classes sparingly, drank beer heavily, and tried drugs enthusiastically. At night in the dorms we discussed neocolonialism, Frantz Fanon, Eurocentrism, and patriarchy. And if the high didn't solve whatever it was that was getting you down, it could at least help you laugh at the world's ongoing folly and see through all the hypocrisy and bullshit.
Blasted out of my sleep, 6 o'clock in the morning. Some maniac outside leaning on his car horn. Gotta go outside and teach him the proper etiquette. Neighborhood bad enough, can't let it get worse than it already is. You hear me? Do y'all hear me? I need my sleep. That's the only time on this planet that I ever get any peace. I tried that college thing on some American dream tip, but yet I still live on the same street that I grew up on. Them same streets that I grew tough on. My mother hoped that I would surpass at least to the middle class, but yet I'm still stuck on that same mentality. And all them years of college ain't even challenged me. But when I graduated, life was right there to put a degree in my hands and a foot on my chest. And here I am dressed in my pajamas and no slippers, about to run outside and rip the backbone out this fool. Ain't got nothing to show for all them years of school but bad credit. And even worse decisions. And I live in a neighborhood where people buy food on credit, so they finance what they don't just take, and they're making payments on food that they already ate. And when they see me on the street, they're looking at me like they're about to break, and I'm snatching open this door like I'm about to break, and I see my best friend. And he's sitting in the minivan with four of those child car seats, and he's looking at me with a gun in his hand. It's like I can hear his heartbeat. And with his other hand, he takes a swig of liquor from a bottle of scotch, pops the door locks like, get in, again. Moves the pictures of his children off the car seat with the gun, throws them in the glove box, then it's like everything stop. And we drive, and we drive, and we drive till we get to the part of town where it seems like the American dream is still alive. And in my mind, I'm playing Nina Simone as I'm looking out the window on the passenger side. And it's like somebody scraping their fingernails along my bones as I feel this grown man cry. And I wonder if he knows that tens of millions of people in this country are depressed but using alcohol or drugs to remain in denial. I wonder if he knows that there's a suicidal tendency hiding behind almost every smile, because no matter how many times they go back to school or how many jobs they work simultaneously, they could never seem to permanently change their lifestyle, but somehow they convince themselves that it'll be different for their children. And eventually they'll realize that's a fantasy, but they need something to believe in until then. And him, he just wants to be a father to his children. But sometimes, y'all, after all the love is gone, children become pawns in a relationship. Relationship with his children is the vehicle that his ex-wife chooses to take out her frustrations with, and if he's just one day late on the child support, she reports it to the courts. And what's driving him crazy is yesterday, he just got laid off. Now, 30 days ago, her and the kids just moved in with a new man who drives a Range Rover and plays golf, and that's a year ago from the day that my best friend had to go to jail for making her last boyfriend stop telling the children that their father was soft. And right now, he feels like everything's lost. That's why I'm glad he came to me to give me this opportunity to put a few thoughts across. And you see, all day and all night, we talk. And I tell him, a man is judged by what's in his soul and what's in his heart, and not just by what's in his pockets. I tell him, me and him are friends through thick and thin, and if he's in pain, we need to put our brains, time, and money together to stop it. I tell him, if the fact that we don't have a lot of money is a problem, then rather than getting fed up, what we need to do is wake up. And like Moses and Jacob, whenever we get together, just find new ways to profit. Because in my eyes, our friendship is how we live and how we die. And don't you ever believe, even for a second, that I would ever let you slide. Now, for what I'm about to say, I want you to listen with all your pride and sexuality aside, because as God is my guide, like my own self, I love you.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Thank you. You know, they say it takes all sorts of people to make up a world. Maybe so. Chances are that so far you haven't met very many different kinds. Your family and friends, the people at school and church, they're all pretty much the same kind of people. But when you go into service, you're going to meet new people. Different kinds of people. And one of the people you're going to meet is you. Yes, when you leave home and go into service, you're going to come face to face with yourself. How do you see yourself? What kind of guy are you? Some fellows see themselves as big shots, almost single-handedly defending the nation. Some see themselves as cut loose from home, free to forget the standards they lived by, free to try anything and everything. Some see themselves as good servicemen, out to do a job as best they can and get the most out of it. And some guys, well, you can go in without having thought out the role you're going to play in service and afterward. There'll be opportunities to cut loose and do things you've been brought up to believe are wrong. It takes a lot of courage to stand up to what you believe in. It's a lot easier just to go along. You may not want to go, but unless you've thought things out in advance, you'll be an easy mark. Now, what's wrong with having a little fun? The trouble is, when you lack this clear picture of yourself and your character, you have a hard time stopping something once you've started it.
President Obama already faces a serious new foreign policy challenge. There's word today from the Pentagon that in the closing days of the election campaign, Iranian jets fired on a U.S. drone. Let's get the details from our Pentagon correspondent, Barbara Starr. What are you learning, Barbara?
Well, Wolf, it was last Thursday, just 1 week ago. We now know that two Iranian Russian-made jets, aging aircraft, but nonetheless very workable, flew out into the Persian Gulf, into international airspace, according to the Pentagon, and fired at a Predator drone, a U.S. Air Force Predator drone that the Pentagon says was on a routine surveillance mission, although that mission was classified. Here's what the Pentagon had to say about it all.
We believe this is the first time that an unmanned aircraft has been shot at over international waters in the Arabian Gulf.
Is that an act of war?
I'm not going to get into legal labels. The reality is that we have a wide range of options, as I said before, to protect our assets and our forces in the region, and we'll do so when necessary. We have communicated to the Iranians that we will continue to conduct surveillance flights over international waters, over the Arabian Gulf, consistent with longstanding practice.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerers of death's construction. In the fields the bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning our brainwashed minds. Oh Lord, yeah.
Amateur video posted online appears to show a Syrian military helicopter being shot down by rebels in the country. The aircraft can be seen spiraling from the sky after being hit by heavy artillery fire. before bursting into flames over the northwestern city of Idlib. The footage appears to suggest that rebels have acquired heavy weaponry, despite many Western governments' reluctance to provide military assistance.
Politicians hide themselves away. They only started the war. Why should they go out to fight? They leave that role to the pawn. Time will tell on the power minds. Making war just for fun. Treating people just like pawns in chess. Wait till that judgment day comes.
Fighting in Aleppo in northwestern Syria is showing no signs of slowing down. And this footage, which purports to show a rebel-armored vehicle destroying a government tank, has just appeared online.
Allahu Akbar.
Heavy fighting was reported in the industrial area of Leramaun, and this video appears to back those reports up.
Allahu Akbar.
The YouTube channel that uploaded the video has consistently been generating activist content it claims comes from Aleppo since April this year. In this particular video, first the rebel tank can be seen rolling into position, then there's a brief face-off, some gunfire, and the government tank is hit. Later on in the video, there's another explosion, and the government tank erupts in a ball of fire.
And Japan have begun large-scale war games close to waters where China and Japan are locked in a territorial dispute over a group of uninhabited islands. More than 45,000 members of the Japanese and American military are taking part in the operation around the southern Japanese island of Okinawa. Both countries have denied the war games have anything to do with the dispute with China.
Americans know that Israel and the United States share common values, that we defend common interests, that we face common enemies. Iran's leaders know that too. You know, for them, you're the great Satan, we're the little Satan. You're the great Satan, we're the little Satan.
You're the great Satan, we're the little Satan.
For them, we are you, and you are us. And you know something, Mr. President? At least on this last point, I think they're right. We are you, and you are us. We're together.
You're the great Satan. You're the little Satan.
So if there's one thing that stands out clearly in the Middle East today, it's that Israel and America stand together.
You're the great Satan. You're the little Satan.
I think that above and beyond that are two principles, long-standing principles of American policy that you reiterated yesterday in your speech, that Israel must have the ability always to defend itself by itself against any threat, and that when it comes to Israel's security, Israel has the right, the sovereign right, to make its own decisions. I believe that's why you appreciate, Mr. President, that Israel must reserve the right to defend itself. And after all, that's the very purpose of the Jewish state, to restore to the Jewish people control over our destiny.
You're the little Satan.
Now in darkness world stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, hand of God has struck the hour. Day of judgment, world is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling, begging mercy for their sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings.
Greetings, Professor Falcon.
Hello, Joshua.
Strange game. The only winning move is not to play.
And again?
The only winning move is not to play.
And again?
The only winning move is not to play.
But quite certainly there comes out of this inquiry a feeling of real disillusionment with the ideal of power. To be in power, to be in control, is not something that any sensible person wants. Imagine the situation of Big Brother. Mr. J. Edgar Hoover, Heinrich Himmler. To be glued day and night to a highly defended office with telephones, television screens, watching, peeking, spying on everyone and anything. Getting all this information together. Why? You could never leave the office. I mean, the people, character, I suppose, like J. Edgar Hoover, goes home in the evening, but when he's back home, you know, there are guards sitting outside the door, there's that hotline telephone going to something, he's always having to be in control. And he can't take any time off, he can't go for a walk in the park with a friend, or go innocently to the movies, or sit down and just relax and have an undistracted party in the baths at Big Sur. Yeah, what a pauper this guy is. Completely deprived. Because he wants to be in control, because he wants power. People are frustrated in love. Be if you're jilted. There's a natural tendency in a human being to seek power as a substitute. And that's a very negative thing. It's like having a bad temper. To seek power after you're frustrated in love, you should try and get back on the love beam. Because nobody wants power. Now you may say that's shirking responsibility. that if you were a really responsible person, you would go out for power and try to use power to the best possible advantage, for the benefit of all. All right, what would be the benefit of all? Ask them. What do you want me to do with this power? I'm dictator. What would you like me to do? Well, nobody knows, because they haven't thought it through. They think of all sorts of short-range things, and they are largely conflicting and confusing, because they're not well thought out. But again, when it finally comes down to it, nobody wants to be God. Now then, when Oriental philosophy and religion was first introduced to the Western world, it was introduced under the auspices of people who were fascinated with power. It was introduced in the latter part of the 19th century, when we had heard all about evolution and how the human race was going on to ever greater heights, and we would eventually develop Superman, according to Nietzsche or G.B. Shaw, and H.G. Wells. Remember, all that early fantasy of where evolution would lead through the development of technology. And so at this time, people like H.P. Blavatsky were talking about the mysterious wisdom of the East. And they phrased it, they commended it to us in a technological spirit. That there was psychic technology. That there was something that you could go way beyond anything that could be done through the physical sciences. You could cause your physical body to disintegrate to another level of vibration and then transmit it and reassemble it somewhere else. You could live as long as you liked because you control the fundamental processes. You could determine if you decided to die where you would be reborn, exactly. You would be a complete master of life. And so there are still innumerable books being sold which present Oriental philosophy and religion in this light. That charlatan Lobsang Rampa, who writes about Tibetan mastery. People read that because they think that there may be a way of beating the game. So therefore, the wise men of Asia were represented through this kind of propaganda as masters of life, as, for example, people whose emotions didn't bother them, who could put up with any amount of pain by simply turning off their feelings, who could foretell the future, who could read your thoughts, and who were above all kinds of ordinary human frailty. Well, when I first met Buddhist priests, Zen masters, swamis, all these wise men from the East, one of the first things that impressed itself upon me was that they were perfectly ordinary human beings. They had bad tempers. They were fussy about certain things. They just acted as I would expect human beings to act. And so at first I was very disappointed. I thought they had feet of clay, that they didn't come up to these promises of psychotechnology. But after a while I got to realize why not, that they had already thought all that through. They had thought through what might be done if one had all these powers, and had decided that wasn't what they wanted. The powers of this kind in Sanskrit are called siddhi, S-I-D-D-H-I. But there is hardly one decent scripture or text on yoga that does not say again and again, if you get siddhi, ignore them. Go on to something else. These are only the foothills. These are, furthermore, not only foothills, but they are seductive, blind alleys. Won't take you anywhere at all. Now, I think that this is the greatest possible lesson for the Western world to learn, because we are so hung up on the idea of power, of control, of being able to make everything go the right way. And if we've never thought it through, when you get control of it, what are you going to do with it? Supposing I have, I'm an alchemist, and I have a whole secret closet full of love filters, very potent ones. And if I see a desirable woman, all I have to do is to offer her a cigarette or give her a glass of wine with one of my secret potions in it. And instantly, I'm her master. Now, what, when I think that through, what would I do with a situation like that? Because all I've got again is that plastic doll that when I push it, it does what I tell it to and doesn't have any comeback. What you always are looking for in things is where the surprise is there, where there's a comeback. And you say, my God, this thing is alive. It has a will of its own. It is not in my control. And I would like to have a relationship with something like that, because it would never be dull. And also, you would feel true affection. After all, you can make love to yourself in a mirror. You can have one of those Dutch wives. You buy them in a place in Kobe, where you get these rubber girls that you fill with hot water. And sailors take them on long voyages. But what an awful thing, you know, when you realize that this thing has no gear, no surprise in it, no thing that it does on its own, you see. And so when you think things through like that, you understand you do not want power. You don't want to control everything. And therefore, these Zen Buddhist masters that I met and others were not super occultists. And very many Westerners who visited Japan expecting to get a satori as a result of which they would know everything and control everything were grievously disappointed and said there's not much in this after all.
An earthquake struck off the coast of Guatemala. At least 45 people have died and dozens have been injured, and more are trapped under the rubble. The 7.4 magnitude quake was felt more than 1,000 kilometers away in Mexico City. It's the largest earthquake to strike Guatemala since 1976. First responders say homes and a school have collapsed in the country's west.
Election results in a moment, but first, breaking news as another big earthquake hits Canada.
The 6.3 magnitude quake hit about 85 miles southwest of Port Alice, British Columbia. That's about 305 miles northwest of Seattle. Now, tonight's quake comes after a 7.7 earthquake hit off of Canada's Vancouver Island in the Queen Charlotte area. A tsunami is not expected, but we'll keep you posted if anything else happens.
George Bush accidentally votes for Barack Obama. From the start, it says here that there was eyewitnesses saying Bush argued with poll workers for several minutes afterwards in effect to redo his vote because he accidentally voted for Barack Obama. So after he was leaving the poll station, I guess Fox News interviewed him by asking him a question of, Mr. President, Fox News is reporting that you've accidentally voted for Barack Obama. Would you care to comment? As he replied, yes, unfortunately, because of this incompetence of the folks who designed the ballot, my votes count for the other guy.
Mitt Romney has a million more votes than the president.
Maltratei, sim, maltratei demais.
Dói!
E machuquei, que, meu coração que bate calado, que bate calado, que bate, bate.
Dói, dói, dói.
Oi, 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 oi.
Is what did it. Now, as we watch the president's campaign rally in Chicago, let me show you now the popular vote as it's being tabulated all across the country. This is interesting. Have a look at the popular vote now. Mitt Romney has a million more votes than the president.
And again?
Mitt Romney has a million more votes than the president.
And again?
You're the great Satan. You're the little Satan.
This is the popular vote. 40 million votes for Mitt Romney. Just under 39 million votes for the president. But the president has won re-election.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
And I need to be checked on this, but if memory serves, we have never had a president re-elected who lost the popular vote.
Maltratei, sim, maltratei demais.
Dói!
E machuquei, que, meu coração que bate calado, que bate calado, que bate, bate.
Dói, dói,
dói! Oi, 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 oi.
Well, I have great respect for our decision desk, and I see that they're very happy in Chicago, but I've got to tell you, the Romney camp has real doubts about the call that's been made by us, and I guess other networks, about Ohio. They do not believe that Ohio is in the Obama camp. I just got an email from a top Romney person. I said, do you agree with our call? He said, not really. It is less than 20,000 votes now, with 20% of the vote still out in GOP areas. Carl was just on the phone with somebody else, and you got some more recent figures.
Well, here it is. The secretary, the networks, our network called on the basis of about 74% of the vote being in. The Secretary of State website has 77.49% of the vote in, and it shows 2,229,686 votes for President Obama with 49.19% of the vote, and for Governor Romney, 2,228,695, a 911 vote difference. A 911 vote difference.
Let's get right to David McKenzie. He's live in Kenya for us this morning, taking a look at how the president's ancestral family was reacting. Hey, David.
Hey, Soledad. Well, if there's a center of Obama mania worldwide, it's here in Kogelo, Kenya. It's on the western part of the country and home to so many Obamas, they sometimes can't even fit them on the street signs. They've named several streets here after the Obamas. Early this morning, the scenes here were just a bedlam. I want to show you some pictures. Partying, there's a band here, they're playing CNN. When people realized that President Obama had gotten a second term, they said again that he is the son of Kenya, the son of Africa.
Oh my God, seriously.
Seriously.
I say, oh my God, seriously.
Seriously.
Oh my God, seriously.
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 Sounds like. The day after.
It's over.
Yes.
Yep. This is a day where half of the country is disappointed with the outcome.
Obviously, you concede with disappointment, but you summon up the grace that is needed.
This is not good.
But this stuns me.
All these issues that were there before remain.
Higher taxes.
High gas prices. High unemployment.
Failed record in most areas of policy.
And
more government spending, more debt. Will we become more like Europe, more like Greece?
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Sounds like a recipe for four more years of gridlock.
Nothing's changed with the balance of power.
No big, broad mandate that he can claim. Won by less than he did the first time.
This is the new America. This isn't your father's America.
Unregistered voters may have been allowed to vote. The Black Panther Party.
Voting issues.
Voter fraud.
There was illegal voting in Ohio. Yes, people do try to vote twice.
We're going to see a very contentious second term.
President Obama needs to be humble.
Will the president come across the aisle?
But can he do that?
Barack Obama, in many ways, doesn't have a bipartisan bone in his body.
I feel very badly for Barack Obama.
He's a weak, inattentive leader.
He has a difficult road ahead. I think Mitt Romney is wise to pray for him.
The takers have taken over. The makers are clearly in the minority. Am I right?
This country has changed in that it is now more divided.
15% say that Hurricane Sandy was the reason they voted for President
Obama.
It was
the most important thing. One photo op.
Then we are the shallowest country in the history of man.
Did the mainstream media help President Obama win? Of course they did.
Wonderful, wonderful television. Wonderful, wonderful journalism.
That's what we do at Fox News Channel.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
What is Fox News? It's just a parade of propaganda, isn't it? It's just a festival of ignorance.
As we keep our eyes open, we see the world is in a state of upheaval, and all of this is really a preparation, a chaos that precedes the formation of a new world. And this world that we're talking about is the one I've written about with Steve in Spontaneous Evolution. And it's very interesting because we talk about evolution as the coming together of individual units, coming together to form community, and this is a pattern of evolution. And it's interesting because even the motto of the United States, E Pluribus Unum, and it says, from the many come one. And this is exactly what the evolution of the whole world is about to experience, and it's really part of the whole U.S. motto and the credo of what our country was built on. And so while we're seeing this evolution and chaos start, we're also seeing the action of Occupy Wall Street. This is a visual representation of the change and evolution that's in front of us right now. And why this is important is this is people standing up for a simple reality. The world is not sustainable. It is no longer supporting us, and we must make a change in our behavior to take us out of an inevitable extinction and into a world we can thrive into. And it's very interesting because at this time, what is Occupy Wall Street all about? It's really talking about how the moneyed interest, how the corporate presence is actually changing the course of human evolution. And why I really want to bring this up is because rather than talking about the corporate presence, we are really talking in the political arena about whether there should be more government or less government. One side says government is way too big, take it apart and throw it away, and the other side is saying no, government is needed to really help us secure a uniform and healthy future. And to me, this is the most important point. It's not the question of whether more or less government is important. It's actually the question of corruption of government. Government is great. Government keeps us all together. In the human body, we have 50 trillion cells. All the cells have different jobs, whether they work for the heart, whether they work for the digestive system, whether they work for the lungs. They all have their different jobs. But there's a government. The government is called the nervous system, the central nervous system. The nervous system's function is not to tell how individual cells should carry out their jobs and what they should do in their day-to-day life. The function of the government of the body, which is called the brain, is actually to coordinate the actions of all the different entities to work in harmony toward a collective end. And this is exactly what the role of government should be. The government should be there to do two fundamental things. Protect each citizen's rights so that they can live the life that we talk about in the pursuit of happiness. But it's also there to protect the commons. And this is one of the most important missions of a government, is to make sure that we do not destroy the environment, do not destroy our water, our air, in the process of seeking corporate greed. And yet, the government is now corrupt. We also say, okay, let's get rid of the government. In fact, is that be throwing the baby out with the bathwater? The whole thing we must do is get corruption out of the government. The rules of the government are necessary and imperative. I do not trust General Motors to make sure that I live in an area or atmosphere with clean air and clean environment. I would not leave that to corporations to decide how my world should be kept, because corporations are self-serving and only looking for a profit. I'm looking for a government that is free of corruption, a government free of the manipulation by the private industry and the private money to give them the world that they seek at the expense of our world. So the argument, more government, less government? No, wrong argument. The whole point should be government without corruption. We need this, as the brain is responsible for coordinating the functions of 50 trillion citizens called cells in my body. We need our government to help us coordinate our behavior and integrate our lives so that we then create a much more wholesome and thrivable future. So while we're out there and the Christmas season is coming and Occupy Wall Street is going to get a little pressure from Mother Nature, the whole point is this: keep the movement alive. Keep this change going. It is our passport to a future where we can survive, thrive, and live on this planet in the way we were meant to. The Garden of Eden. This is what we were provided with, and this is where we shall return.
Sweet!
Realize it here. And I
issue on the Colorado ballot was watched nationwide, the push to legalize marijuana.
The controversial plan passed, but now faces a legal challenge. Here's a look at the numbers for Amendment 64. 53% voted yes to 47% of no.
Okay, let's quit with the flexing. I'm axing. How's about just kicking back and relaxing? I'm done with the construction, filled with that concoction. Say what the hell and kill a few brain cells. And it's swell, cause just as well, I'm in the mood to hit the two pills in the brain. What can be better than this be? I'm feeling doopy, 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 doopy. So just pop the magic and drag on. Pop the magic and drag on. Pop the magic and drag on.
Washington made history with some of our controversial ballot measures, starting with marijuana. I-502 passed with a comfortable margin. One of the huge supporters of allowing adults to have up to 1 ounce of marijuana, who gave not just his time and celebrity to the cause, but donated hundreds of thousands of dollars, travel guru Rick Steves. Now, he talked with our Sabrina Register, and his answer to Washington potentially being in direct conflict with the federal government was quite interesting.
I don't think use will go up now that it's legalized much. I bring a European perspective to discussion, and Europe smokes less pot than Americans do. There's no correlation between drug consumption and the strictness of the laws. Now, as far as the feds preempting us, the states are incubators for change in our society. This is how we make headway in our country, is states experiment. And 17 states have already legalized medical marijuana in direct opposition to federal law, and the federal government respects those state laws.
The Baker Man, cause I bake all day. Pass it to the left, then it comes back my way. Then I sway, but you know I never stumble. Cause B is back, and I don't mean no bumble. I mean the Baker B, the one who's on the rise. Baking the ish till I got them Chinese eyes. Cause like Papa needs his spinach, I need my weed. Remove that seed, then I'm ready indeed. So jump on that bus like Reeves in speed. Cause every man has one basic need. So let's use that. Like the good Lord instructed, don't fret about the pigs, cause they all corrupted. And once I get baked, baked like a cake, I'm just like a king, and that's when I sing. Pop the magic and drag on. Pop the magic and drag on. Pop the magic and drag on.
If you want to possess pot, apparently you don't have to wait until December when I-502 becomes law.
Many in the law enforcement community are now saying they're not going to go after anyone for minor marijuana possession starting today. Hannah Kim is here to tell us how it's all going to work.
That's right, Matt. Starting December, the new law will allow adults 21 years or older to have up to 1 ounce of marijuana. But as far as many prosecutors are concerned, they're living by those rules starting today.
It's just one of those days that I'm feeling kind of lazy. Try to hit the crazy stuff that makes everything hazy. Puff it up, I can handle, but I'm not bragging. I'm puffing out smoke like Puff, that magic dragon. That's sagging expression on my mug caused by that funky drug that gives me that I don't get my attitude. I'm the dude with the dupe, and like B, I'm in the mood. So back up, punk, I wanna jack up. I'm Mr. Farm Animal with the gun, hates it. Mr. Farm Animal fucking confiscates it, and I get nailed for possession. Piggy starts stressing, time to learn my lesson. But I still puff that magic, then I drag it on. Strong, taking hits like King Kong. Boom, nothing boom. Wrong when I'm blunted to the max jack, with the big swazzy heads in my backpack, ready to roll in more ways than one jump. Strolling, sagging, dragging on as I puff another weedy. And the pigs roll up, they're looking pretty seedy. So I make like Speedy, and I jet, never getting wet from the mat tech that those pigs in blue be packing, macking as if they were the king. But they know who bears a me up with a ring. Let me sing. Pop the magic and drag on. 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 Yeah. Pop it up, pop it up.
Puff it up, puff it up,
puff it up, puff it up, puff it up, puff it up.
In fact, in Colorado, Pot got 50,000 more votes than Obama. So you don't want to be on the wrong side of that.
Oh my God, he's so high. Can you hate it? My prefabricated bomb that gets all of my stress alleviated. Now you can get the hit from my secretary, go red eye. Now you're feeling better. I'm holding the cold and the spell is being casted. Now I'm getting blasted. Pause it. We got one to hit, give it to me. I can feel the magic flowing right through me. Now wave your blunts in the air and puff it up like you just don't care. And if you're feeling high like the evergreens, everybody say, oh yeah.
Well, everyone in Pennington is talking about it. Something smells like weed in that back part of the library.
No one has located the source of the weed smell, but witnesses say that it seems to come from that area of the library behind the computer desk between the magazine rack and that weird couch.
Head librarian Cookie Stevens and library volunteers Margaret Mosier and Gail Fredericks were in the middle of discussing the upcoming used book saleganza when they smelled something strange.
So Dyson smelled marijuana somewhere, and we're like shocked.
Yeah.
And so Doug goes, do you smell it?
Oh, I thought it was my linguine that I left.
It smelled something funny, like it was on fire.
We thought it was Cookie's link was on fire.
And I couldn't believe it was drugs
no,
in
I've
the
never
library.
Gail knew what it was.
I guessed. It's not like I'm Cheech and Chong or something.
Without any way to confirm that the smell was indeed weed, Cookie Stevens called her husband Sheriff Stevens, who called in local ceramics teacher Dutch Gibbs, who lived in Seattle for a few months in the 70s.
Yeah, that's weed.
Sheriff Stevens has begun compiling a list of potential suspects, including that boy Lance, who has girl hair and hangs out down by the quarry, Greg Fromke, who was spotted this evening really going to town on some potato skins at Steaky Jake's Steakhouse, and Mr. Thompson. Luckily, one young reading enthusiast seemed unperturbed by the illicit smell.
I hear a lot of people talking about it. I mean, I don't smell anything. I mean, I don't smell anything. I really, really, really love the library.
The weed smell comes on the heels of last month's discovery of a gigantic pair of women's underpants in the children's fiction section. According to Stevens, that case remains open as well. Well, too bad it wasn't meth. They just could have had you come down and sniff it out, huh, Kathy?
Randall, I'm in recovery.
Put down that iPhone or BlackBerry, look up from your computer screen or video game, stop texting, emailing, chatting online. It turns out that the internet could be driving us crazy.
Chicka chicka woo woo!
Pumpernickel.
How dare you?
The environment that we live in is based on a fractal geometry, not the geometry that we all learned in school, which was called Euclidean geometry. And to give you a simple example of that is make nature using Euclidean geometry. When we were five, we did. We made a tree that was a column with a ball on the top. And that is about as close to Euclidean geometry in nature as you can get. The reality is nature is not programmable. You can't make nature filling in a Euclidean geometry equation. However, fractal geometry, a newer understanding of geometry, it represents that nature is built on self-similar patterns built on top of each other. So it's like the concept they talk about of Russian nesting dolls, where you open up one doll and there's another doll inside, then you open that one up and there's another doll, and they're not exactly the same, but they're self-similar and they all are one on top of the other. Nature is built on this understanding. The relevance is this. This is why if you understand how a cell works, you understand how a human works, because a human is a cell reincarnate in a sense that there's all the functions in a human body are already present in every living cell. So we were programmed after the cells. The relevance of that is that when we evolve, we become cells in a larger structure called humanity. And as cells evolve, as animals evolve, so will humanity evolve. It's a pattern, and it's a self-similar pattern, very different than the nature of Darwinian theory, which is based on random mutations, that everything is an accident, that it's not. So the old axiom, as is above, as is below, becomes a geometry of nature. So if you understand any level of the structure, you automatically have insight into every other level of the structure. The point about it simply is this. Inside of our bodies are approximately 50 trillion cells. What's the relevance is that we think of ourselves as a singularity when that's farthest from the truth we are. by scientific definition, we are a community of 50 trillion sentient cells. I used to culture these cells, take them out of your body, put them in a culture dish, and the relevance about that is that these cells have their own intelligence. They grow in a petri dish. You don't have to tell them how to do anything. They know how to grow, divide, form all the things they're supposed to do. They're innately intelligent. And the relevance about that is, think about this issue, that we're having trouble right now with about 6.5 billion people trying to get them to live on the entire surface of the planet, that within your body right now are 50 trillion sentient individual living cells in a matrix that represents a nation. And the old mystics would say the answers lie within, or seek within for the answers. And the fact is this, if you understand the dynamics of how 50 trillion cells can live in the smallest environment under your skin, in harmony, in bliss, because if you're in bliss, so are they. If you can understand how 50 trillion entities can live in this harmony, all the rules are there for a few billion people to live on the planet.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
GoFindTheOthers.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.